Welcome to New World Notes, hosted by Kenneth Doust. In the winter, a young man's fancy turns to thoughts of food, and so shall we today. We'll feature several short commentaries by Jim Hightower on the politics and the business of food. I hope you'll stay tuned. Thanksgiving has just passed, and Christmas is coming, and both American holidays have a focus on food. And food is the focus of our show today. In fact, I've been thinking about food for a lot of reasons. For one, Connecticut's annual harvest is now about over. At the farm stands, there's still a few local apples and a cabbage or two, but that's about it. Farmer Bissett, out in South Glastonbury, has added a few hogs to the produce he raises. Maybe a dozen pigs at the moment. These pigs lead an old-fashioned, real barnyard life. It's a far cry from the inhumane, insane, stinking conditions of the factory hog farms that produce 99% of the pork Americans eat. Sometimes, when I'm in the mood for a motorcycle ride, I'll putt over to the farm and see how the hogs are doing. And the laying hens, too, which are beautiful creatures. They're also free to roam about a bit. With luck, I'll also be able to chat with Farmer Bissett for a few minutes as well. Endangered species, all of them. Barnyard-raised chickens, barnyard-raised hogs, and family farmers. The hogs are scheduled to be slaughtered about now. To sell meat to the public, the animals must be slaughtered in a federally approved slaughterhouse. These are pretty scarce here in the Northeast. Bissett takes his hogs to New York State for slaughter. Next time I see them, they'll be cut into pieces, sealed in plastic, and frozen, all done at the slaughterhouse. Here's an irony. If you want fresh, locally raised meat, you almost always have to buy it frozen. I feel a little guilty at my lack of discomfort about eating Bissett's hogs. My lack of upset that these interesting, friendly creatures, whom I have met and spoken to, are going to be killed, chopped up, and eaten. Maybe it would be harder if I lived on the farm, if I fed the animals every day, came to tell one from another. Maybe I've become numbed by the incessant violence and brutality of the culture I live in. I don't mean video games and street crime. I mean the economic system that chews up and spits out workers. I mean a government foreign policy that consists mainly of war, war, and more war, and mostly war against civilians. Maybe I'm just so numbed by all this by now that the death of a pig just doesn't engage me the way it did E.B. White. Of course, he raised the pig himself. A great essay, by the way, E.B. White's Death of a Pig, published in 1948. Give it a read if you've got the time, and your public library is still standing. Anyway, it's now early winter, and food is in the air, and our show today is on that very subject. We'll feature the old liberal rabble-rouser, Jim Hightower. Several times a week, Hightower releases a 2-minute commentary on U.S. politics and economics. Hightower's politics seem to be on the progressive end of the Democratic Party. I'm more impressed by commentators who are more radical than that. Give me some Noam Chomsky, Michael Peretti, Richard Wolff, Chris Hedges, Melissa Harris-Perry, and so on. But more mainstream liberals, like Jim Hightower, and like his fellow Texan, the late Molly Ivins, well, they have important things to say, too. Hightower is pretty good when he talks about food, agribusiness, and agricultural policy. Years back, when Texas had a liberal Democratic governor, Ann Richards, Hightower was state agricultural commissioner. So he's pretty well acquainted with both politics and agribusiness. Let's hear some Hightowerisms on the subject. We'll start out close to home, so to speak. Here's a piece on more marketing chicanery at the supermarket. A pet peeve of mine, too. That 1 pound box of spaghetti is now a 14.2 ounce box of spaghetti. And that 8 ounce can of tuna, for years, has been a 6 ounce can of tuna and is now a 5 ounce can of tuna. And before we get to that, how about a paramilitary campaign that sacked an organic farm, courtesy of the drug war and the militarization of our local police forces? Here's Jim Hightower.
The Bible tells us that the Garden of Eden was heaven on earth until Adam ate that apple. Then all hell broke loose. Recently, hell erupted in the garden again, this time in Arlington, Texas, on a small organic farm named Garden of Eden. At about 7:30 in the morning of August 2nd, a SWAT team of armed police agents, code enforcement officers, and narcotics detectives suddenly exploded all over Shelley Smith's little farm. They burst through the gate, handcuffed the terrified residents, and held them at gunpoint while the agents executed the raid's mission. Which was what exactly? A City of Arlington spokeswoman explained that the purpose was to improve the quality of life and to resolve life safety issues within neighborhoods. It seems there had been complaints about marijuana being grown and about the place being unkempt. So, what did the derring-do raiders achieve? They captured 17 blackberry bushes, 15 okra plants, 14 tomatilla plants, some native grasses, and all the sunflowers. Then, they whacked down Shelley's sweet potato patch with a weed eater and seized the farm's compost along with some wooden pallets, old tires, and furniture. Notice what they did not find? Marijuana plants, nor any other illegal products. In short, on the basis of rumor, autocratic police power was unleashed to improve the quality of life by destroying an organic farm. This is Jim Hightower saying, why would police resort to paramilitary force just to check out a few marijuana plants and some trash? Because right-wing officials and arms industry lobbyists have been pushing police departments all across America to switch from a peacekeeping approach to an aggressive, militarized SWAT mentality, with officers being armed, trained, and psyched to treat common citizens as enemies. To learn more, go to aclu.org/militarization. Mothers the world over have told their children a zillion times, stop playing with your food. I now share their frustration and would like to yell at the conglomerate packagers of America's victuals, stop playing with our food. Actually, they're playing with our heads, using dishonest packaging tactics to raise their prices without us noticing it. A 16-ounce carton of something, quietly slips to 14 ounces, but does not drop in price. Then there's the dimple trick. A jar of Hellman's mayonnaise, for example, has had its contents shrunk, yet the new jar looks as big as the old one, unless you turn it on its end. There, you'll find a big indention in the bottom, a hidden way to shrink the capacity of the jar and give you less for your money. David Siegel, who writes the Haggler column in the New York Times, recently reported on his Adventures in Kraft Foods Land. He talked to a PR lady there about the corporation's unpublicized but rather dramatic change in its Baker's brand of cooking chocolate. Instead of an 8-ounce package selling for $3.89, suddenly a box of Baker's contained only 4 ounces of chocolate, which sells for $2.89. Wow, that's nearly a 50% price hike per ounce. What gives? Siegel asked the Kraft spokeswoman. The change was consumer-driven, she craftily replied. Our consumers have told us that they prefer this smaller size. Sure, said Siegel, but what about that slippery price? She was as slippery as the price, declaring that the product is competitively priced. That was not the question, but her whole game is to avoid giving the honest answer. We're gouging our customers. This is Jim Hightower saying, conglomerate food packagers not only feel free to dupe us consumers, but also, they're considering such corporate chicanery to be a legitimate business practice.
We've talked about slaughtering hogs. Now Hightower has a few words to say on slaughtering chickens. You've heard of the fox guarding the hen house? Well, let's take this idea a step further. How about taking federal meat inspectors out of the huge corporate slaughterhouses and letting the big corporations inspect the factory themselves. Who would propose such an insane idea? The Koch brothers? Guess again. How about the administration of President Barack H. Obama?
An old country saying notes, you can't make chicken salad out of chicken manure. However, President Obama's Department of Agriculture intends for us to give it a try. Chicken contaminated with chicken manure is one likely result to come from the Ag Department's dangerous and ridiculous determination to privatize poultry inspection in some 200 processing plants across the country. Currently, government inspectors who are professionally trained in food safety are stationed along the processing lines in the factory operations of such giants as Tyson Foods. They examine the birds for diseases and visible defects, including, yes, contamination by feces. But the Obamacans have a modernization plan to remove these skilled independent inspectors and let corporations police their own lines with untrained company hirelings. In addition, the privatization scheme would allow the poultry plants to speed up their lines to an absurd 175 birds per minute. To justify this, USDA notes that it has been running a pilot project on privatization in 20 chicken factories since 1999. Yes, but the modernizers did not mention that salmonella rates in the privatized plants were higher than those having government inspectors. Just as alarming, of the poultry operations that failed the most recent salmonella tests, a disproportionate share were using the spiffy self-policing model. Worse, government inspectors who observed the corporate control system report that when company inspectors tried to be thorough about safety or even tried to remove diseased birds from the line, they were yelled at, reprimanded, and shunned. This is Jim Hightower saying, this senseless rush to privatize is literally sickening. For more information and clean food alternatives, go to Food and Water Watch at foodandwaterwatch.org.
Well, the proof of the pudding is in the eating, and the salmonella is in the chicken, or maybe the burger. So let's turn our gaze from the slaughterhouse floor to the fast food restaurants that serve the meat. Here, though, Hightower isn't talking about contaminated meat, but underpaid workers and bad nutrition. Of course, underpaid workers can contaminate the food, too, especially when they are granted no sick leave. Here are four takes on the big business of fast food.
The failure of our corporate and political leaders to make sure every worker gets good health care is causing some unpleasant consequences, not just for them, but for all of us. Consequences like stomach flu. Ill workers often spread illness. This is because millions of employees who deal directly with the public, as well as with co-workers, are not covered by paid sick leave policies. So, when they come down with something like stomach flu, they still tend to drag themselves to work rather than going to bed until they recover. For staying home means a loss of pay, or even loss of their jobs. Low-wage workers, such as those in the restaurant industry, are particularly vulnerable and, since they handle food, particularly threatening. Nearly 80% of America's food service workers receive no paid sick leave, and researchers have found that about half of them go to work ill, because they fear losing their jobs if they don't. As a result, a study by the Centers for Disease Control finds that ill workers are causing as much as 80% of America's stomach flu outbreaks, which is one reason that CDC officials have declared our country's lack of paid sick leave to be a major public health threat. You'd think the industry itself would be horrified enough by this endangerment of its workforce and customers that it would either take the obvious curative step of providing the leave or of pushing in the name of public safety for a public sick leave program. But, au contraire, amigos, such huge and hugely profitable chains as McDonald's, Red Lobster, and Taco Bell not only failed to provide such sensible care for their employees, but have lobbied furiously against city and state efforts to require paid sick days. This is Jim Hightower saying, all top executives who never touch the food their chains serve get paid sick leave. For them to deny it to workers is idiotic, short-sighted, and even more sickening than stomach flu. At last, a fast food giant that gives a damn about the economic hardships faced by low-wage workers. Not only does McDonald's care, but by gollies, the good executives who sit atop the golden arches are goosing up the meager $8.25 an hour that their workers have been getting paid. As you can imagine, hair-netted hamburger flippers everywhere would be very grateful to see their hourly wage boosted to $10. Well, yes, but McDonald's didn't become a giant by paying fair wages. So actually raising the $8.25 wage is not the goose the executives are giving to their workers' paychecks. Rather, the burger chain has launched a website that instructs employees on how to stretch that 8.25 by better budgeting. Plan ahead and save, exclaims McDonald's incredibly helpful website, adding that if each hourly worker would just organize personal financial records properly, he or she would, quote, become a better decision maker. Wow, low pay and a moral lecture. How great is that? Unfortunately, the website's suggested budget seems to have been written by Scrooge. Initially, the bean counters forgot to include a few essentials in the practical money skills budget they drew up for low-wage folks, like clothes, childcare, and food. Yes, a fat zero was budgeted for eating. Embarrassed, the clueless budgeteers threw in a little something for chow, but wait, their suggested monthly expenses total nearly $1,000 more than McDonald's pays its workers. Not to worry, though, for the budget helpfully assumes that each employee will have a second job to cover that shortfall in pay. This is Jim Hightower saying, meanwhile, McDonald's CEO draws $13.8 million a year, a take-home that makes budgeting unnecessary. But hourly employees could make that much, too, by working only 760 years for McDonald's. The appeal of fast food chains has not been their food, mostly fat, salty, sugary, empty calorie blah, but their speed. Order, pay, and bam! Your warmed over burger, pizza, chicken, taco delight is instantly handed to you. Yet, for a mega chain based on fast, McDonald's has proven to be embarrassingly slow, leaving it with flat sales and declining appeal. The executives in charge were so stuck on peddling obesity and diabetes for fat profits that they completely missed a mass shift in today's marketplace, the rise of health-conscious consumers. As a result, McDonald's has been losing out to Subway, Chipotle, Panera, and other chains that have been quick to cater to the lean and green customer base, particularly women and young buyers. But look out! For here comes the McDonald's marketing machine with a blur of ads and promotional gimmicks touting, quote, a new global commitment to make a world of difference. Using endearing pictures of children, the Big Mac chain now claims to be all about fresh veggies, fruit, salads, juices, milk, health, and a fuzzy happiness for all. The Golden Arches Empire has even signed up Bill Clinton to give its PR hype a sheen of sincerity. For an undisclosed splash of cash, the fast food marketer says it is now global partners with the Clinton Foundation to produce a healthier generation through its sales of more nutritious Happy Meals to the world's kiddos. However, the fast food giant is in no hurry to deliver on this pledge, claiming that getting healthier foods into its supply chain is a difficult and slow process. The CEO snickered that we don't go down to the grocery stores. This is Jim Hightower saying, well, maybe they should. Doing it the McDonald's way, he says, will take until 2020 to get the more nutritious stuff into all the stores of the chain's 20th largest markets.
The design of the galaxy is in the soil. Patterns are there, all very near. Look down, wisdom abounds. Soil grows the seed, bursts the flower, courts the bee, makes the honey. Honey is free. Soil anchors tree, hosts the nest, cradles the bird, offers song. Song is free. Honey we relish, bird song we cherish, and soil we must revere. The design of the heavens quite near. Soil holds the seed, grows the plant, feeds the body, lifts the breath, breath is free. Soil houses life, fuels the web, awakens heart, stirs the dance. Dance is free. Breath we do cherish, dancing we relish, and soil we must revere. The design of the galaxy is in the soil. Answers are here, abundantly clear. Get down, wisdom abounds. The design of the galaxy is in the soil. The design of the galaxy is in the soil. The patterns are there, all very near, abundantly clear. Look down, wisdom abounds.
Let us all now bow before the God of free enterprise, whose awesomeness was revealed in a recent news release announcing that the divine managers of fast food demigod McDonald's achieved a profit of $1.5 billion in just 3 months this summer. Holy Big Mac! How did it do that? Peek behind the curtain and you'll see that McDonald's secret power is thee and me, America's taxpayers. The corporation rips off its huge workforce by paying poverty wages and no benefits, then directs the workers to the food stamp office and other government-funded safety net programs. Neat, huh? A major chunk of the chain's cost of doing business disappears from the corporate books and, shazam, reappears on the government's books. In fact, the National Employment Law Project reports that McDonald's phenomenal $1.5 billion profit is bloated by an estimated $1.2 billion that we taxpayers will shell out this year to support its predatory wage and benefit policy. Aren't you loving it, as the chain's ads say? But the Golden Arches are not alone in this fast food flim-flam. The conglomerate owner of Kentucky Fried Chicken, Pizza Hut, and Taco Bell duns us for $648 million to underwrite its poverty pay. Subway burrows into us for $436 million. Burger King, a British outfit, taps us for $356 million. Little Sweet Wendy's grabs more than $250 million from us, and Dunkin' Donuts dips into our pockets for $274 million. And look here, it's Domino's Pizza, whose extremist right-wing owner says he hates government spending. But he's picking the taxpayers' pockets to the tune of $126 million to subsidize his free enterprise. This is Jim Hightower saying, the corporate powers preach about the magic of the marketplace, but magicians don't do magic, they perform illusions.
As you can hear, our focus is broadening up to the level of national economic policies. If full-time workers are paid so little that they are eligible for some government welfare benefits, then the taxpayers are subsidizing that employer's profits, in a roundabout way. But sometimes the subsidies are not roundabout at all, but direct. And, surprise, surprise, much of these farm subsidies go directly into the pockets of some very rich capitalists, including some very rich capitalists who have very little actual connection to farming. Meanwhile, the same farm bill that is giving your tax money to the rich is taking food stamps away from the poor and hungry. Is this enough to make you angry? Here again is Jim Hightower.
As we approach our annual Feast of Thanksgiving, please join me in expressing our nation's deepest, heartfelt feelings for an extra special group of America's farmers. That raspberry goes out to the 50 billionaires who've been farming the U.S. Farm Subsidy Program for years, harvesting a cornucopia of taxpayer cash for themselves or their corporate empires. The diligent watchdogs of the Environmental Working Group match their own farm subsidy database with the Forbes 400 list of richest Americans to unmask these Gucci-wearing old McDonald's. EIEIO, what a ripoff! Among the richest of these faux farmers are three Walmart heirs whose personal wealth totals $100 billion. Then there's investment huckster Charles Schwab, sitting on a $5 billion wad of wealth, yet pumping $500,000 worth of rice subsidies into his California duck hunting resort. Also, corporate takeover artist Henry Kravis, who has amassed some $5 billion in wealth, took more than $1 million from us to subsidize safflower, sunflower, and other crops raised on two of his ranches. Especially jarring is the presence of such multi-billionaire right-wingers as oil and entertainment tycoon Philip Anschutz and nuclear waste mogul Harold Simmons. They've expressed disdain for government spending on poor people and other, quote, takers, yet they've gladly taken more than $500,000 each in farm payments. Actually, the working group's tally understates the total haul by these mega-rich tillers of our public treasury. Many also harvest crop insurance subsidies, but Congress has dutifully outlawed disclosure of these names to the public, even though it's our money they receive. This is Jim Hightower saying, in fact, these billionaires' most profitable ag products are the Congress critters they keep in their corrals.
And with that, we bring our post-Thanksgiving food show to a close. The personal is the political, the saying goes, and you can't get much more personal than the food we eat. On the politics and economics of food, we heard 8 commentaries by Jim Hightower. You can hear and read more of Hightower at his website, www.jimhightower.com. And, of course, you can hear and read more from us at our website, newworldnotes.blogspot.com. That intriguing music we heard, The Design of the Galaxy is in the Soil, was dug up by Virtual Renderings. Neither he nor I knows who sang it. If you happen to know, how about dropping me a line and filling me in? You'll find my email address displayed at the website, and once again, that is newworldnotes.blogspot.com. From Darkest Connecticut, this is Kenneth Doust. Thank you for listening. It'll get to my non-carborundum, and please eat with some care. And this week, I'll end on the same word, but I'll spell it differently. Not C-I-A-O, but rather C-H-O-W. Ciao!